Welcome to The Value of Knowing, the podcast where we dive deep into the world of legal complexity and opportunity on the vibrant continent of Africa. Stay tuned for expert insights and a closer look at the legal landscape in Africa, where Bowmans helps its clients to manage legal complexity and unlock opportunity. That's The Value of Knowing.
My name is Ariana Esaias, a director in the IP and technology team in the Bowmans Kenya office, and I form part of the Bowmans cross-sector fintech group. Bowmans has recently published the latest edition of its Africa Guide to Key Fintech Trends, where we discuss the late legal landscape in 10 African jurisdictions. This year's report highlights the remarkable growth and resilience of the fintech sector across Africa, driven by rising smartphone use, cheaper internet, and a young urbanizing population. We're seeing digital banking and mobile money services like M-Pesa booming, with Africa's digital payments market maturing faster than Europe's. Regulatory frameworks are evolving, with countries such as South Africa, Kenya, and Nigeria introducing new licensing regimes and sandboxes to foster innovation while protecting consumers. There's been a surge in embedded fintech partnerships and cross-border expansion, as well as increased adoption of blockchain and AI technologies. However, challenges remain, including regulatory uncertainty, cybersecurity threats, and the need for greater financial inclusion. Overall, the future looks bright, with fintech poised to revolutionize financial services and unlock new opportunities across the continent. Today, we examine the evolving regulatory landscapes shaping the fintech sector in Africa, with a focus on two of its most dynamic markets, Kenya and South Africa. Joining us today to guide our discussions is Bright Tabane, a partner in our Johannesburg office and a seasoned financial regulatory lawyer with specialized expertise in financial technology services. Also joining us is Cynthia Muteta, a senior associate in our Nairobi office, who specializes in banking, finance transactions, and financial services regulations. Welcome to today's episode. Starting us off, let us set the scene. Silicon Savannah first. Cynthia, in your view, what are the most prominent fintech sectors currently driving innovation and growth in Kenya?
Thank you, Rihanna. The key fintech sectors we see in the Kenyan market are mainly digital credit, very many players coming in the market or actually existing in the market. Then we have the payment sector, where players providing payment services from payment gateways, wallet providers, and e-money issuers. Then we have banking, being the digital banking, and the key products we see in the banking sector are open banking, which is providing information by banks to authorized third-party providers who provide other services to customers. So banks provide financial information to facilitate the provision of other services. Then we have embedded banking, where banks are able to provide their services in platforms that are provided by non-bank or non-financial institutions. And we also have a banking as a platform products, where the banks provide their platform to third-party service providers to provide non-bank services on the bank's platform. The other key sector we see is in the savings and investment sector. This is mainly services with respect to collective investment schemes. That's the distribution and marketing of collective investment schemes, mainly in the market commonly referred to as unit trust or money market funds, which is just one type of the unit trust. And we also have other capital markets products that have mainly in the CMA sandbox, but the key products here are savings and investments through collective investment schemes. And then we also have digital currencies. I think there's been a very keen interest by Kenyans in dealing or trading in virtual currencies. And this has also just created a lot of interest in the players as well, foreign players trying to provide the services in Kenya. So, and there's been a lot of growth in that space as well.
No wonder you're busy, Cynthia. And Bright, how do the key fintech sectors in South Africa compare to those in Kenya? Are there unique areas of focus or specialization?
There are similarities, but I would say in South Africa, the key sectors are two, being the crypto asset space as well as the payment services. Exactly aligned with what Cynthia said. In South Africa, we've got lots of payment players coming into the space. The payment industry is very growing, people coming up with different payment methods. And that ranges from wallet services, person or peer-to-peer payments, person-to-business payments, etc. So we see lots of developments in the payment space, and we see influx of international players coming into the country to set up shops locally and targeting especially peer-to-peer business for South Africa, because, I mean, South Africa has got a number of non-residents or foreign nationals that are working, are based here, and they often send money home, and that has become a key market for payment providers in South Africa. And crypto services or crypto space as well. I mean, there are lots of players in the market, and based on the statistics that the regulator announced late last year, we had already more than 248 players in the market who approached the regulator for licensing in relation to the framework. So these are the key ones, but that doesn't mean there aren't developments in this for other sectors such as banking, lending, and insurance. They are, but they're not as aggressive as these two.
That is a phenomenal amount of applicants. Back to Cynthia. So Cynthia, from the work you've been doing, could you describe how the regulatory framework for fintech in Kenya has changed over the past few years? Have there been kind of some significant milestones or shifts that are worth highlighting?
So I think generally the fintech regulation process in Kenya stems with, you have the product in the market, and then the regulators come up with regulations after, just based on how the products have been utilized in the market. So that is generally the flow of just development of fintech regulation in Kenya. So we have, for instance, for digital credit, we did have digital credit providers on the market. And then due to concerns on unconscionable conduct by some of the digital credit providers, it influenced the provision of regulation for digital credit providers in 2021. Then it was just regulating digital credit providers, but there have been updates again in 2024 for the regulation of credit providers generally in the market. And this include peer-to-peer lending platforms as well as crowdfunding or crowdlending platforms. When it comes to the capital market space, I think we have seen development of regulations, especially coming from products that were initially in the sandbox. So for instance, we did have a lot of products on intermediaries who were facilitating the distribution of collective investment schemes to retail customers in the sandbox. And in 2023, we saw regulation for intermediaries providing the services to fund managers who are the ones who are actually operating the unit trust. We've also seen development of regulation of crowdfunding platforms in 2022. And we note that there are also some of these products in the CMA sandbox. We have also seen the development of virtual currencies, virtual currency regulation in the market. And this has been spearheaded by, I think, mainly the fact that the VASP services do pose AML risks. And some of these AML risks are some of the reasons that we ended up getting gray listed by FATF. And in 2024, now we have also been listed by the EU in the list of high risk jurisdictions. And there has been push from stakeholders from the government to try and help put in place regulation to regulate VASPs and encourage tightening of AML measures with respect to the trading in digital currencies. But also just separately, there's also been push to create a robust anti-money laundering framework for digital general fintech products, because I think one of the reasons for the grey listing was the fact that there are products or services that are provided by digital providers that are not subject to the stringent measures that other financial services are subject to, and therefore there are loopholes from an AML perspective leading to the grey listing. So those are some of the changes in the development of the regulatory framework for fintech in Kenya.
And Bright, kind of looking to South Africa, how has the regulatory environment for fintech in South Africa evolved recently? Are there notable differences in approach compared to Kenya?
Yeah, to some extent. I mean, in South Africa, we haven't seen much movement except in respect of one sector. I mean, in respect of payments, there hasn't been any movements. It's just that the fortunate part is the current framework, which we call the traditional regulatory framework, had some element covering payments or digital payments. So players in the payment space are currently subjected to the to that legislation, which was drafted long ago, but it caters for them. And what they, how they usually do it's, whenever you want to introduce the product or want to participate in the payment space, you have to check your business activities or your business model against this legislation. And if you trip into it, you comply. And fintechs find a way to do their business outside the framework, and that it's permissible. And then in respect of crypto, there were developments that started in or were implemented in 2022 in South Africa. And those developments were in relation to our regulator, being the FSCA, declaring crypto assets as a financial product under a legislation called Financial Advisory and Intermediary Services Act. And this is the legislation that regulates financial institutions that provide financial services, including asset management in respect of the traditional financial products, being bonds, shares, etc. So what the regulator did was simply to issue a declaration to say crypto are a financial brand under the legislation, and that what that means is that crypto service providers, CASPs, whose activities qualify as financial services under that legislation will become regulated under that legislation, and all the activities will become licensable. And that was very welcome regulatory framework, because even prior to that, to the implementation of framework, crypto asset players or CASPs were looking forward to that framework because they thought it would bring confidence to the market, the consumers will have some confidence in the space, and also that will help in trying to drive away fear that was driven by the original publication by the regulator that they don't regulate crypto assets, and whoever trade crypto assets are doing so at their own risk, will have no recourse to the regulator. And then when this happened, it brought some joy to the players, and the framework was such that existing CASPs were required to apply to the FSCA, being our regulator, by 30 November 2023. And if you did apply for that license by then, you will be allowed to continue to operate even if your license wouldn't have been issued or granted by then. So until the regulator provides feedback, you are allowed to operate without a license for so long as you file your application by the deadline. And like I said earlier on, in December, about 248 CASPs were licensed in South Africa, in December 2024, and those licensed CASPs included the traditional financial institutions, because financial institutions, I mean, are also interested in crypto assets. So they didn't apply for fresh licenses. They just asked for the amendment of their existing licenses to cover crypto assets as a financial product. And I mean, immediately after that, or simultaneously with that, our AML regulator, or rather the legislators, amended the Financial Intelligence Center Act, being our AML legislation, to cover CASPs as the so-called accountable institutions, meaning that CASPs are subjected to our AML legislation fully so, and they have to comply with all obligations that are on accountable institutions such as banks, asset managers, or fund managers. And I think that's what has been happening so far. And also in the AML space, there were the regulator, being FIC or FIC, also issued the so-called travel rule regulatory framework, and that again, it's in line with the fact that CASPs are now accountable institutions under FICA. In other sectors like your lending, banking, there hasn't been much happening. The players play within the current regulatory framework, and as I said earlier on, fintech companies or firms have a way sometimes to play around the regulatory framework because the current framework is not conducive for their business model.
Thanks, Bright. And I guess leading back to you just on that question, then some of our clients kind of entering the market, or kind of new fintech players entering the market, are there additional regulatory challenges? Do you feel that there are regulatory challenges or hurdles for new entrants coming into the market? Or just, you know, kind of based on what you said, players are able to work within the existing kind of rules and regulations to their benefit and positively?
Yeah, so there are regulatory challenges. Most of them stem from exchange control regulations in South Africa, and that applies to both the payment service, crypto asset services. I mean, our exchange control regulates the inflow and outflow of capital cross-border, and they treat crypto, for example, as a capital under the exchange control regulations. And if you're doing transactions on a cross-border, automatically you should be required, or you should be complying with the exchange control regulatory framework. And there, on the other side, the regulator, being the Southern Reserve Bank, is not interested at this stage in regulating crypto or even in monitoring a cross-border transfer of crypto. And that is creating an issue in the market, and it creates difficulties for players in the market. And similarly, in terms of the payment services, for instance, payment service providers who seek to assist foreign merchants with the processing and collecting funds locally and aggregated funds to those merchants offshore can't do so under the current framework. And so those are the key challenges that the players are facing in the market insofar as the cross-border market is concerned. And also the lack of clearly defined regulatory framework is playing a role. That's a problem in our country insofar as the payment service is concerned. And all these issues hinder businesses in South Africa. And now, as to whether you can do whatever business you want to do, that might contravene or contract diligence depends on the risk appetite. There are some fintech firms that whose risk appetite allow them to do this, and some risk averse clients or firms do not. So that way they get their businesses confined to the domestic markets or to the certain business activities that are not aligned with their business model international wise.
Okay, so I guess they have to gauge their risk appetite specifically then kind of for the South African market. Cynthia, are there any particular hurdles that are unique to Kenya kind of in the same regard?
I think I would echo Bright's sentiments, especially for initial players in the market. As I had mentioned earlier, the regulations tend to follow the product. So initial players in the market would get in and it would be uncertain as to how they are regulated. And for some, though, these challenges might end up reducing over time just due to the fact that the regulators are now keeping up with the regulation, as I just mentioned earlier. And that is one challenge we also see here in Kenya. And the other challenge as well is when regulations are drafted, they are drafted to be very wide and blanket in the sense that they sometimes do not cover the bespoke nuances of different products or different firms. So sometimes we might find a product that is maybe on the periphery of what the regulation covers, but then they are subject to the full suit of regulations. But when you assess the product and the risk they pose, maybe that being subject to the full suit of regulation is the burden that raises just outweighs the risk mitigation that is achieved based on that regulation. So you end up finding in those situations, there's just need to engage with the regulators on the scope and the applicability of the regulation. But again, you say that also creates some form of uncertainty because it's also just based on ongoing discussions with the regulators. So we do, I think our challenges seem pretty much similar to the challenges in South Africa in that regard.
Thank you, Cynthia. It sounds like on the one hand, maybe kind of having broader regulation gives new entrants a bit more room to innovate and scale. But actually, it sounds just from what you were just saying, the kind of the regulatory challenge that should be highlighted is actually that whilst, you know, the regulations follow the product, in a way, it sounds like it does kind of hamper innovation and prevents some players from scaling. Is that right? Or is there a bit of both for Kenya?
I think it's a bit of both. I think as also Bright says, there are players who would choose to take the risk and proceed with the regulatory uncertainty and the regulations follow and it works. And we have seen this with some of the major players in the market. But then there are some who, again, for those who are risk averse, would avoid the market until there's regulatory uncertainty. So we have seen both players as well.
And then South Africa, I mean, right, you touched upon obviously the kind of the exchange control being quite a big issue, but are you seeing that that is having an impact on the ability of fintech firms to innovate and scale their operations?
Yes, a huge one, Ariana, especially for clients who approach lawyers before rolling out products, because you have to advise them on what the law says. But like I said, there are fintech firms that still bypass the exchange control, especially in respect of crypto assets, because they know that the regulator has no ability to monitor the cross-border transfer of crypto. So they know that from an enforcement perspective, it's going to be challenging for the regulator to come after them, and they do it. But some clients who want to play by the book, they can't do it. Then they tend to restrict their business locally, and which might not be profitable enough or not aligned with their business strategies. And then similarly, in terms of the payments, I mean, fintech players are very, very innovative. They always find a way. As an example, because usually digital wallets in South Africa got the potential of triggering or qualifying as a business of a bank and require some money to be registered as a bank, what fintech firms have started to do is to structure their digital wallets in a way that don't trigger the Banks Act. And in doing so, they just simply kill or avoid one element of the definition of the business of a bank or deposit-taking activities. And they ensure that the funds in their wallets cannot be withdrawn. So usually they create wallets where clients can deposit money for redemption, for use to purchase goods from certain merchants in the particular ecosystem. And they never allow customers to withdraw those funds unless there's a compelling reason or it's required by law. And that is legally permissible and it doesn't trigger the banking regulatory framework. And again, it's more of fintech firms coming up with the ideas to play within the market without triggering the regulatory framework.
So I guess, I mean, those are very clever ways and kind of innovative strategies of both kind of being able to play by the book and certainly obviously kind of appeasing investors. Cynthia, looking at Kenya then, you know, Bright's just highlighted some innovative strategies that fintech firms are using in South Africa. In Kenya, just from the work that you've been doing, are you seeing any emerging trends or again, other innovative strategies that players are using to navigate the complexities of regulatory compliance in the Kenyan market?
Yes, Ariana, the players who use the sandboxes in the regulatory frameworks where sandboxes are provided for, mainly the capital markets framework. So for players who have products that don't squarely fit within any existing regulation, then approach the capital markets through the sandbox, and they can be able to run the product through the sandbox as the capital markets authority reviews their product and figures out the regulation that would be applicable. And in that sense, they're able to get to the market within bespoke regulatory framework that allows them to operate. So some players would utilize that. Many players utilize partnerships with licensed entities where their products are regulated as the products of their licensed entities. Again, this is a way to be able to get in the market, start prowl over the product. At the same time, you within a regulatory framework that allows you to operate even though you do not have your own license. You can piggyback on the license of another third party who's licensed by probably the CBK or the Capital Markets Authority. Though these particular products, of course, would be subject to approval from the Central Bank of Kenya. So such partnerships do go through that extra check from the CBK, but it might be a faster way to approach the market as opposed to trying to figure out the applicable regulatory framework or trying to be compliant from day one with respect to the regulatory framework.
Thanks, Cynthia. I guess looking ahead and, you know, kind of changing tact a bit, looking at reforms and developments, I guess, for the next 5-10 years, one topic that certainly we are being asked increasingly about is the African Continental Free Trade Agreement, which is poised to significantly impact the fintech sector in Africa by fostering cross-border trade and financial inclusion. I wish we had it, but if you had a crystal ball, you know, what do you see will be the impact of the free trade agreement in Kenya or South Africa? Bright, would you be able just to give us your insights for South Africa?
Currently, from what has been happening so far, there isn't any impact. But I anticipate that there will be in the near future some developments, because I remember initially when the African Continental Free Trade Area Agreement was still at the negotiation stage or the draft stage, there was a mention of the so-called settlement system for payments within the areas. So there was a mention or a plan to introduce a settlement system that will ensure payments within those countries in real time. But I don't think that has been taken far or that discussions have been advanced at this stage, and our central bank hasn't said anything about it at this stage.
Cynthia, I don't know what your crystal ball is looking like for Kenya. Are we seeing any, I guess, responses or updates from the regulators?
So we haven't seen any specific responses, updates from regulators, especially in the fintech space. But again, I think just echoing what Bright said, we anticipate that this is going to open up markets for local fintech providers to be able to scale their products and their markets. And we're also going to enable customers to be able to access products that facilitate the cross-border trade. And I think maybe just one that I could mention, I think Bright had also mentioned, is the Pan-African Payment Settlement System, which facilitates timely and cost-efficient settlement of transactions within the African continent. And they actually also facilitate the settlement in local currencies, which is, this product is very helpful, of course, to traders and businesses, because it just enhances or makes the process of settling transactions across borders much more efficient. So if we just glean from that and what the opportunities that the African Continental Free Trade Area is going to provide for fintech innovation or fintech evolution in Africa, I think the opportunities are huge, and it's exciting to think about that.
That's fantastic. And I guess looking at any other additional kind of regulatory developments or reforms, do you anticipate that these changes will be more permissive? You know, will they encourage innovation, or are they looking to be a bit more restrictive, and are they likely to limit certain activities?
Yeah, Ariana, so in South Africa, we've got developments that are currently happening in respect of the payment services. Very recently, I think March this year, our central bank published a draft directive, which was simultaneously published with the draft exemption, right? And the draft directive seeks to prescribe regulatory requirements for conducting prescribed payment activities. So it's we call it the conduct-based regulatory framework, in the sense that it wants to change the current position where only banks can provide certain payment activities and fintechs are only allowed to payment two types of payment activities. And the framework wants to change that and allow non-bank payment participants to participate in the payment system, including in the clearing and a settlement system, meaning that payments will be able to have accounts with our central bank, the settlement system of our central bank. They will be able to settle funds, and they will be able to clear funds, which they can't currently without their banking sponsorship. And then parallel with that draft directive, like I said, there was an exemption, the proposed or draft exemption notice that exemption notice seeks to exempt or to exclude certain payments activities from qualification as a business of a bank, and that is to allow fintech players whose activities in the payment space can be seen as the business of a bank and therefore trigger the licensing under the Banks Act. It will allow those fintechs to participate without being authorized or licensed and not supervised under the Banks Act. And we consider it to be permissive in that sense, because now fintech firms would have more opportunities, would be able to compete to some extent with banks in the payment space. It's still a draft. It was the first draft that was issued and public comments were submitted. We are waiting for the second draft, but at some point it's going to be implemented. We don't think there will be much changes. Any changes that might happen will be more in respect of broadening the scope of the draft directive. I must also mention that our central bank, as I think a few years ago, embarked on the process of conducting a study on the feasibility of issuing or establishing a central bank digital currency in South Africa. There isn't much public information. All we know is that study has been conducted. I think the report has been submitted today to our central bank and they are working on it. We're just waiting outcome.
And Cynthia, I guess looking at Kenya, do you think some of these changes, again, you know, will they be more permissive? Or will they restrict kind of activities?
The changes we anticipate are likely to be more permissive. So some of the changes we're anticipating is an update to the payment systems framework, payment regulation framework, to provide for the different categories of payment service providers. So in practice, the CBK does have these categories that it and they are able to actually apply the regulation to the different categories based on their own assessment of the products and the risks of the products. But then we anticipate that there will be regulation to try and streamline that. So in that sense, then that will be a great thing, because then providers would be able to know exactly where they fit and what applies to them, which would be encouraging as it, again, gets rid of some of the uncertainty in the space. The other regulatory framework that we anticipate is coming soon. Again, I think I've mentioned it, is the regulation of the virtual assets. As maybe just to give a background, initially the regulators had taken a very conservative approach on dealing with virtual assets, and they had issued warnings to customers, just noting how risky the products were, and they had also issued warnings to our directives to financial institutions not to engage or deal in virtual assets or digital currencies. What we see now is that if the virtual assets regulation is enacted, then we anticipate that those restrictions will be lifted, and therefore the players might be able to continue to deal with virtual assets without those restrictions. So in that sense, this is a very welcome development on the regulation of virtual assets. With respect to anti-money laundering provisions, we expect them to have more stringent oversight on transactions, virtual asset transactions, or transactions that are done on digital platforms, which is something that I think was there initially. I think they meshed because the way, again, that our anti-money laundering regulation is drafted, it's very widely drafted to capture the provision of financial services, whether it's on a digital platform or not. I think the measures that are being taken now is just to specify the AML provisions applicable to digital technologies, as well as to enhance the powers of the regulators to have oversight of these transactions and these businesses. So I think to that extent, it might seem like it's restrictive, but again, just noting the background of our grey listing and being listed in the jurisdictions of highly risk countries in the list of highly risk jurisdictions and by the EU, then that means this is a welcome effort towards trying to improve the status of the country in that regard.
Indeed, I think whatever steps can be done to improve the status would be of massive help to the sector. I know we've touched upon kind of virtual assets and digital assets and crypto kind of for your various jurisdictions and countries. We had this big announcement recently that Crypto Week in the US was to be declared by the White House on the 14th of July. You know, and obviously, as I've mentioned, we already have kind of various pieces of legislation and reform looking at touching on kind of virtual assets and digital assets. Do you think it will have these kind of US reforms will have a trickle down impact in Kenya or South Africa? Or do you feel, you know, kind of from where you both are, do you feel regulators are ahead of the game in developing legislation that address the digital assets?
Yeah, Arianas, I don't think that will have impact in South Africa. I think our regulators are ahead of the game. All regulators are involved. They are already looking into this. So I don't think that will really, really impact what the regulators are currently doing.
And in Kenya, Cynthia?
I think I echo Bright's sentiments because the current draft of the bill is poised to be presented to Parliament for the third reading, and we rarely have significant amendments after the third reading. So the Parliament has received recommendation from the relevant parliamentary committee to adopt the bill with certain amendments, and that's what's going to be tabled. So in that sense, we don't anticipate any immediate impact from the discussions that will be held during the crypto week. And again, as I had mentioned before, we also have our own motivations to have the VASP bill passed. So it's not necessarily tied to what would be happening during the crypto week. But of course, I think any discussions or considerations that are raised during the week might be helpful maybe for future considerations. As we all know, this is a very dynamic space. And again, the regulations might need to evolve with time. So they might actually inform or influence some of the developments in future.
Thank you, Cynthia. I guess if anything, it will stoke up the market in the US and let's see some inward changes and developments within the continent here. Thank you both. This has been fantastic. I guess, staying on the tech trend, any parting words, be they fintech players, policymakers, or consumers? Cynthia first.
Thanks, Rihanna. I think it's a very exciting time for the fintech space. I think just in terms of the interest by customers to access these products because of how efficient they are or how they support the financial inclusion. So there's interest from that sphere. There's also interest from players, local players, and foreign players as well to get into the market. And we have also seen the efforts by the regulators to streamline regulation in this space. So I think it's a very exciting time. There's a lot of opportunities, and we're just looking forward to see how things unfold in the next coming years.
Thank you, Cynthia. And South Africa?
Yeah, I think it's worth mentioning that there are lots of regular developments happening in South Africa in respect of various angles that will have a huge impact on the payment space, and most of these developments are driven by consumer protection. So consumers will have more protection under this new framework. There's also change in respect of the regulators or regular supervisions, and that again is to bring protection to the fintech consumers. So yeah, I think the listeners, consumers, fintech players, policymakers must just embrace themselves. The changes are coming in South Africa, and we think they are for good.
Fantastic, Bright. Changes are coming. Cynthia Bright, thank you so much for your time today. This is really interesting, and I'm glad we managed to flesh out, I think, some of the most pressing issues and have a look into our crystal ball. Thank you for listening.
If you would like to get in touch or find out more about Bowmans, please visit bowmanslaw.com.